Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, bonjour. In Spain, hola. In Italy, ciao. In Egypt, ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, akwaba. In Nigeria, peleo. In South Africa, sawbona. In Senegal, nangadef. In Kenya, jambo. In Israel, shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, assalamu alaikum. Greetings. And may peace be upon you all.
The Female Solution Global Radio TV Show invites you to an invigorating conversation with our team of hosts Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Time. Start your week with Monday Morning Mindfulness with Zelda Speaks. Tuesdays, Self-Cell Care with Jody Toussaint. Wednesdays, Repairing Broken Families with Naima Latif and co-host Kareem Hamid. Thursdays, Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. And Fridays, Health and Well-Being with Beata. Saturdays, tune in 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Time. First Saturday, Success Strategies with Jana. Second Saturday, Wendy Williams Esquire on Relationships. Third Saturday, Move Around with Deborah. And fourth Saturday, Wisdom with Mama D. Join us Sundays, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time for Soul Purpose Healing with Beata. Call in and comment 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to the host and be a part of the solution.
Grand Rising, and thank you all for joining us on this Saturday edition of the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. I'm Naima Latif, and we'll be joined by live from London with our host, Jana, in just a moment. And we've got some exciting guests for you. As you know, Jana has been doing an ongoing series on health inequities, and there are some shocking statistics about the horrendous health care that is being received by black women around the world, definitely in the UK and, quite frankly, also here in the United States. So we want to talk about that. There are some health issues that are expanding. Diabetes is one of them. And we know that much of our health and our lack of health care has to do with a poor diet. whether it's lack of access to healthy food, lack of access to insurance, lack of access to the ability to pay for ongoing health services. Well, we've got a guest today whose agency helps to address some of those issues and definitely helps to ensure that we are able to get our needs met. But there are still some ways to go, and later on we'll be joined by another guest who's got a horrendous story about the neglect that she endured with her mother in the healthcare system. But first, we want to bring on our wonderful host, Jana, joining us live from the UK to talk about health inequities, women's health, and black health. Welcome, Jana.
Hi, Naima. Thank you for that lovely warm welcome.
Well, we are so excited that you are addressing a global issue, and
we address a lot of global issues on this show. Welcome everybody to the Success Strategy Show with me, Jana, on the Female Solution Worldwide Radio and TV Network. Oh, wow. Applause. I've never heard that one before. That's great. Thank you. I'm the author of Success Strategies for Black People, and I host the annual blogging Carnival for Nonviolence. And I'm your host for today and on the first Saturday of every month. Here on the Success Strategies Show, every month we seek to help you and support you to find solutions to your problems. We are here to help you make 2022 your best year yet. Today, as Naima has been saying, we are discussing racial and gender health inequalities. My guests today are Ken Atwood, Agency Manager of Diabetic Insurance Solutions, and Sherelle Withers, Founder of Foundations to Futures. Welcome to the show. If you'd like to speak with my guests, and if you have any questions for our guests, please phone in on 515-605-9325, then press 1 to enter the host queue. If you're outside of the United States, you need to put a 001 in front of that, so it's 001-515-605-9325, and then press 1 to speak to the host. You can also join us on Facebook at The Female Solution and on YouTube as The Female Solution. Today we're going to be talking about health inequalities to do with gender inequalities and racial inequalities. So before I bring on my beautiful, beautiful guests, and I know they've got a lot of important stuff to share with us, I'm going to run through a few stories that I've seen in the news, and I've blogged about a number of them. So I've just seen one about black breast cancer. I haven't had a chance to read or listen to this one yet, but I know that black women are subject to a type of breast cancer called triple negative breast cancer, and a lot of doctors are not aware of it. So I saw a presentation a few years ago where a woman in her 20s was having symptoms, and the doctor was telling her, you're too young to have breast cancer. But she had breast cancer. She had a mastectomy, and then she started having symptoms in the other breast. She went back to the doctor, and the doctor said, you're too young to have breast cancer again. So she ended up having a double mastectomy. So, you know, I was talking with Naima about this earlier, and we were saying that we need to take responsibility for our own health, and that is so true. That is so true. We can't expect anyone else to do this for us. Another story, during the pandemic, it emerged that the devices that are used to measure oxygen levels do not work on black and brown skins as well as they work on white skins. So people with black and brown skins were turned away from hospitals because their oxygen level appeared to be fine, and some people died from this. Then
wow.
It emerged... not just to do with the pandemic, but it's emerged that female patients, including women of color, as well as men of color, are routinely offered different treatments than white people, especially white male patients. And this is true within different disciplines. In treatment of heart issues, which is to say cardiac issues, this trend is very widespread. According to a recent article by Abbott.com, a recent white paper stated that a recently published white paper and supplemental information from Beyond Intervention, Patient Experience and Health Equity. There was a survey of 1,289 people suffering from vascular diseases across 13 countries. 13 countries, along with 408 physicians and 173 healthcare leaders, and they found women with coronary artery disease and or with peripheral artery disease reported more challenging experiences compared to their male counterparts in relation to access to healthcare, emotional factors surrounding healthcare interactions, and relationships with their physician. In other words, ladies, they don't want to listen to us. Have you heard that before? They do not want to listen to women. Okay, it also found that women and non-white patients are less likely to be recommended for and receive cardiac catheterization compared with male parents, with poorer clinical outcomes and patient experiences compared with their male counterparts. How poor? Overall mortality rate during hospitalization for myocardial infarction, which is a type of heart attack, was 16.7 among women and 11.5 among men. But when looking at patients under the age of 50, the mortality rate for women was twice that of men. For women, those outcomes impact more than the patient alone in terms of the economic burden placed on healthcare systems and the workplace, and I would add the family, due to repeat hospitalizations and missed work days. So these are health inequalities experienced by cardiac patients. So this research, as I said, it covered 13 countries, and the research was conducted in the United States. In cancer care, as you may know, I was treated for ovarian cancer back in 2015, 7 years ago, and my treatment had a positive outcome. And I thank the National Health Service for this because they saved my life. However, I did some research, and I discovered that there is a disparity in outcomes between black women and white women's outcomes in treating breast cancer. One reason may be that black women delay starting treatment because of financial issues. This research has been conducted in the United States. And before we in Britain become too complacent, it has been shown that black women in Britain being treated on the National Health Service are 4 times more likely to die within 6 weeks of giving birth. 4 times more likely than white women are to die. And the NHS, the National Health Service, knows this. They know this. They have this data, but they don't have any targets for investigating it, which I find really shocking. And I have recently learned that the same thing is true in the United States. So a lot of these links I'm going to post below. I'm going to post them on the page with this broadcast so that you can look at them for yourself. So I did a blog post a few years ago called Why Are So Many of Our People Dying, in which I wrote about the fact that black women are more at risk of heart disease than any other racial or cultural group, and that we tend to have a higher incidence of diabetes and hypertension, and the list goes on. Many African Americans still cannot access health care. I talk about that in another blog post. And I also want to mention the book Death to Diabetes, written by a brother called Dwayne McCulley, who is absolutely brilliant. He teaches us how to reverse diabetes. And I talk in my blog about the fact that the American Diabetes Association actually tried to shut him down because he was giving lectures where he was giving people information on how to get off their meds successfully. And he helped loads of people, so they shut it down, basically, because guess who funds the American Diabetes Association? It's funded by Big Pharma. So these are life and death issues. We're talking about cancer. We're talking about heart disease, and people are dying. Women, including women of color, are dying disproportionately. Men of color are also also dying disproportionately, and I want to know why. I'm going to ask my guests, and I'm going to say, listeners, if you want to call in with your opinions, by all means, please do. And the number, again, is 515-605-9325. And then press 1 to speak to the host, which is me today. If you're outside of the United States, the number is 001. You have to put an 001 first for the country code, then 515-605-9325. So please call in with your questions, call in with your comments, call in with any information you've got. I'm going to welcome my first guest. Who's on the line?
Yes. We have Ken Atwood on the line. And
welcome.
Ken,
welcome to the show, Mr. Atwood.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, and I'm excited to be here. And the subject matter is very important and very close to me and my agency, as you know, because we specialize in working with people who have health challenges that may not have been able to get help, and we understand that there are reasons why. And so we're here to contribute what we can.
So first, what's the name of your agency?
The agency is Diabetic Insurance Solutions.
And where are you based?
We're in Chicago, Illinois.
Tell me a bit about some of the health inequalities you have witnessed. What are some of the reasons why people have not been able to access health care or access insurance?
So the issues band around money, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And it bands around money and information. And so sometimes we've been passed misinformation from one person to another. Some person is unsuccessful in doing something. They tell everybody, well, it can't be done. And so now that becomes the norm in that community. That word is passed along. In our community, we are faced with issues of diabetes, high cholesterol, obesity. These are common things, high blood pressure. These are common things that we face, and they're usually attributed to diet. But even diet is attributed to money. Many of my clients, because it's hard to eat well
when you're on a low income. It makes it much harder.
Correct. And not just necessarily because you don't have the income. Sometimes you just don't have the information, right?
Okay. When you say our community, you're talking about African Americans specifically.
I was talking about African Americans specifically, but I can broaden that to what's happening in the United States. We have a higher incidence of obesity. We have a higher incidence of obesity. Of course, it's climbing. Diabetes is climbing in the African American communities rapidly, but it's also climbing in the overall community as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so these things are attributed to when I get down, I start talking about money. And right now, inflation is running at about 8.6%. That means the loaf of bread that you look at. It's horrifying, okay? It means the loaf of bread that you went to get 2 months ago and you bought for $1.99, today is $3.99.
That's terrifying. It really is. So that's not actually 8%, though. I mean, I have noticed for the past few years that things like, say, for example, I buy a bag of Brussels sprouts. They used to be a pound. The same bag of Brussels sprouts went up to £1.50. All of a sudden, that's a 50% increase. And now I think it's like £1.75 or something. So when they say it's 8% inflation, that's not strictly true, is it?
Well,
can you break it down for those of us who might not know, a pound is like equivalent to a dollar, right?
A pound these days is probably about, I haven't checked lately, but it's probably about £1.10 to £1.20. I mean, sorry, $1.10 to $1.20, something like that.
$1.10 to $1.20, right. So when she references that, go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, you know, that's not an 8% increase to go from a pound, which is about $1.20, to £1.50, which is roughly about $1.70. That's not an 8% increase. This is what the government is telling us, but it's not really borne out through our experience, is it?
Well, it is, and I'll share with you how. So when they take the overall estimate of inflation, Remember, they're not talking about item to item.
That's just an example that I noticed and I pay attention to because I like Brussels sprouts. But I'm sure the same thing is true over many, many other items. It's not just sprouts that are skyrocketing.
I didn't mean it to indicate the Brussels sprouts, right?
Okay.
But what I meant was it's over many different segments. So in the food industry, we may be suffering inflation that feels like 20 to 25%, and some cases higher, depending on what the particular thing is, because of other things involved like logistics, travel, supply, and so all those things fall into it as well. But like for instance, look, gasoline in the United States. Two years ago, I could buy gas for $1.99 a gallon. Today, I spend almost $6 a gallon. Now,
oh, my gosh. I find this terrifying. And then that affects everything else, because certainly in Britain, a lot of our food is imported still. I mean, we grow a lot of food, but we still have to transport it. So the cost of fuel going up affects everything else. It doesn't just affect how you heat your home or how you drive your car. It affects the food prices. It affects everything.
It literally affects everything, but here's how it works out in an individual's life. And because really what I think is most helpful is we're able to figure out how we can make individual change. So we know
that a lot of huge things have to be changed.
Our overall diet, different things like that, supply food, eliminating food deserts. And when I say food desert, that means that there are actually places in urban communities where there are people everywhere, and there's no place locally within those regions where you can get fresh food. That's literally insane.
That's shocking.
It is shocking. But this is one of the things that we have to deal with, right? So from my perspective, and I'm in financial services, that means that I insure people, I help people retire, I help people, help educate people about what they can do with their money right now, today, okay?
Right, okay.
So
I like the sound of that. I think we all need a bit of that.
How do we understand or interpret inflation, right? So I mentioned gas, right? So it means that if you were making, say you were making $50,000 a year or 50,000 pounds or euros, whichever measure we're using, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then
at the end of the day,
last year for that same $50,000, you only spent $2,000 in gas as a part of your overall expense. But this year, you're going to spend about $200 a week. So you're going to spend about $800 a month on average, which is going to bring you closer to $10,000, okay,
wow,
that you're going to have spent in gasoline just getting to and from work, right?
Right.
Now with the remaining $40,000, you got to figure out, what do I do? How do I feed my family? I got to pay taxes.
Hmm.
Taxes in America are horrifying. We are at around 38%. So now I got to take 38% out of that money. And so now when it comes down to making common sense health decisions, these are the things that we got to deal with first. In our lives. So before we get to being able to say, do I have a doctor? Can I have health insurance? These are the decisions most people are making. And what I have to share with them, what I have to share with you, is that even though it's a hard choice, we've been kind of confused as to what is a good decision, a bad decision. So we've been taught to say a lot of things that are desires that we have become needs or necessities, right? And so we haven't been able to make those proper choices. So sometimes we're choosing between, because our television has also substituted as our babysitter, choosing between having cable, right, or having health insurance. And then when you mentioned earlier, you were talking about that you find that there's a disparity in terms of how the medical community treats people of color. It is perceived both on their side and on our side. When I say our side, I mean the people of color. It's perceived that we are able to tolerate more than the other citizens. So
we're more able to resist pain, or as you said, tolerate pain.
Which
is a complete myth,
is it not? It is an absolute myth, But we have been conditioned to make the myth a lie. What do I mean by that? I mean that we've been conditioned to endure more. So instead of an African-American male going to the hospital or going to the doctor the first sign of an issue, he goes, it's okay, I got it. Instead of an African-American woman going to the hospital at the first sign of pain, I can't do it, right? Because she has to be a strong woman,
yeah,
right? But that's not a rational decision. But we've been conned.
Yeah, I wrote an article about this month online, the Strong Black Woman Syndrome.
We know,
I'm sure we know where this originates from. You know, this was a survival strategy during slavery. We had to, you know, have this particular kind of strength where we acted like we could endure. We acted like we weren't in that much pain. We had to hide it. We had to mask it. It was a survival strategy, but we're still doing that now. We're still cutting ourselves off from our physical sensations and our emotions now, and this is not serving us.
It is not serving us. And here's what I want to do. The one thing that I can say for people to hear me, okay?
Yeah.
You have to be aware of what's happening in your life. You got to be honest about who you are and where you are. So a lot of people I talk to say, well, I can't afford it. Or they say, you know, I got it covered, and they don't have it covered. Or they say a lot of different the truth. But here's the reality of it is that you have to be discerning of what's working in your life, and you have to
yes.
you have to stop saying to yourself that things are working when they're not working.
Right.
We have to stop fooling ourselves, and we complain about it every day, but yet we don't do anything different
because we're
not happy with it. I'm not happy going to work every day the way I do. I'm not happy with the fact that when I take a sick day off, they take money away from me. I'm not happy with the fact that I go to the doctor and I have insurance and I still get a bill. I'm not happy with those things, but because I assess that that's the way things have to be, I become complacent in those things, and therefore they do not change. So in order for change to happen, I have to make a change. So if it means that I have to forego a trip to McDonald's or forego a trip to Dunkin' Donuts or forego whatever it is to make sure that I have the things in place to ensure my long-term survival, that means my insurances. That means understanding how my money works and where it's going. Because if you don't have a plan for your money, somebody has a plan for it. If you don't have a plan for your health, somebody has a plan for that too.
Right.
The medical profession
right.
does not survive and thrive. It does not survive and thrive because of healthy people. It survives and thrives by treating and band-aiding sickness and not curing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well,
so
I've said
if you don't have a plan,
this so-called strength comes from. Where do you think it comes from? You're saying that we're lying to ourselves about our health.
Yes.
Why do you think we do that?
Well, I mean, because we've been led to believe that that's what's expected. We've been led to believe that if a man is in pain, no real men don't cry, right?
Right.
We've been led to believe that the African American woman is a literal workhorse who is able to sustain more than any other being on the planet. And so with that going on in the background in her head, you know what I'm saying? It's a challenge because she feels like if my husband's sick, I got to take care of him. I got to take care of him. I can't afford to be sick because I got to take care of them. That's my job. When the reality, if we don't take care of her, then all of them fall apart anyway.
Absolutely.
So that,
absolutely.
That conversation,
so where do you think that we're receiving these messages from?
Everywhere we look. Look, in modern media, we get the fake images and fake retelling of old stories that are no longer valid. So what I mean by that is the images of that we present even now on television in the 20th century. I'm not talking about 50 years ago where we were looking at slave genre movies and things like that. But even now, the images they present are of false positives, of things that appear to be this is what's accepted or acceptable for you to do, and it sets a standard both physically and economically that they cannot readily see. So it keeps you reaching for stuff you can't get. Now, the truth of the matter is you technically can get it if you understand the process, but they don't show you the process. They just show you the end result. So you look like you're looking at the roof with no ladder to get to the top.
Right. And then every time we're singing and dancing and smiling, yes, Master, I'm smiling. Yes, Master, I'm happy. We are.
Donna, we
got to
take a break. Donna, we got to take a break. But when we come back, I got a question for Ken Atwood about the practice that people have of maybe waiting until their cancer gets in, like, stage four or whatever, because they think they shouldn't complain. Tough it out. You know, what does that do insurance-wise when you have an illness that has become terminal, and does that knock you out of getting health coverage because you waited so long? We'll talk about that when we come back, and we've got calls on the line. If you want to speak, please press 1. We'll know you have something to say. We'll open your mic and add you to this conversation. And if you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325. And again, press 1. That lights your number up on our switchboard, and we'll open your mic and add you to this conversation. And you are listening to and watching The Female Solution. Today is Success Strategies with Jhana, joining us live from London, talking about health inequalities, women's health, and black health. Are there some major inequalities in our health care systems? We'll be right back after this quick break, so stick and stay. Don't stray away. Back in a moment. Stay with us.
Taxes are higher than ever. Every day, thousands of our residents leave Chicago to shop in Indiana. Jobs are being lost, and businesses are relocating. Let's find a way to lower our taxes to encourage residents to continue living and shopping in our city. Let's rebuild. Let's restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of the city of Chicago, and I will work hard to find solutions that matter. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for mayor.
Have you ever dreamed of going to exotic places, meeting fascinating people, enjoying uplifting music, and spending nights in a luxurious hotel? Do you look forward to a relaxing vacation where you can walk along the beach or sit in a quiet park and enjoy the sunset or sunrise? Whether you're flying around the world or driving across the country, we will share travel tips that will help you stay safe while you enjoy the journey. Join me every third Saturday of the month, 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, and move around with Deborah here on the Female Solutions Show. Call in and comment, 515-605-9325, and press 1 to speak.
Oh man, God sent the monthly sun bill today. This sunlight is really expensive, especially during this season. I'll probably have to work overtime to pay it.
Well, you better pay it on time. We don't want the sun to go out and we're sitting up here all day in the dark.
Wouldn't it be terrible if God charged us for sunlight? Well, thank God, the light and heat from the sun is free. So why are we paying such high bills for the energy we use in our homes? Because we don't know how to use solar energy, the free energy from the sun. You can convert your regular home to a solar energy home and save tremendously on your electric bill. Take a look at your electric bill. Wouldn't you like to reduce or possibly even eliminate that cost altogether? Let one of our solar consultants show you how. Call today, 312-849-3456. And schedule a free consultation. That's 312-849-3456.
And we are back. And Jhana, before I get that answer to that question from our guests, I'd like to share some comments that our Facebook friends have added to the conversation. And Zelda, our Monday host, has said, Grand Rising Queen Sisters, you ready for an exciting show? Healthcare, both physical and mental, matters. Yes. And thank you, Zelda, for coming on my blue glasses. Got to see today. And Viata, our Friday host, says, good day, sisters. And Viata says, yes, we should all have tools in our mind and medicine cabinet to manage pain and inflammation, like deep breathing and peppermint oil. Stay out of hospitals. And Viata said, this brother's speaking some powerful truth. And she wants to know who he is. And, of course, he is Ken Atwood, who is joining us to share some wisdom and give us some insight from the Diabetic Insurance Solutions. And, Ken, I want to know, how does that impact our ability to get insurance when many times people will wait to the last minute, they're in pain, they're suffering, they keep taking aspirin or Advil or whatever kind of painkillers, and then they finally are forced to go to the doctor and they find out they have, like, major cancer spreads or something that is almost at the level of being terminal. Does it become impossible to get insurance coverage at that point?
So in many cases it has been, to be honest. In terms of acquiring insurance based on your health, a lot of people have had challenges. I mean, in our community, when I talk about obesity, being overweight, most people don't recognize what overweight even really looks like because it's a very common body type, right? And so most people don't realize when you are 6 feet and you are 280 pounds, that's a problem. Most people don't realize that, right? And so what happens is that they creep across the line, and then they become uninsurable by most companies because insurance companies operate on a risk basis. So they want to look at the likelihood of them retaining their money, right? And so if you are someone who has extraordinary health risks, like for instance, I myself am actually a diabetic, right? And I'm a diabetic who had an insurance license, which brought me to this company, which had an insurance license and could not find insurance. And so when I came to the company, the young man who introduced me to the company, he immediately had a solution. There are some companies that are ready to take higher risk or ready to take on health solutions and health opportunities for people. But when you get to the point where you are near terminal, where you have been pronounced in that case, there's often nothing we can do except for something that they call guaranteed issue, which means they will insure you, but they won't insure you for the full amount for 2 years. You're going to have to make it through that period for 2 years, and then after that, your insurance coverage will become valid. Now, here's the thing about that. You don't lose money in that. They just give you your money back if you die before that. So the family will get whatever premiums you put up. They'll get that, and usually they'll get some interest to go along with that. Likely, now this is the funny part, the interest that they get on is going to be higher than you would have gotten in the bank anyway. So it's still, even at that point, it's still not a bad decision of what to do with my money. But waiting until that point puts the insurance companies in a position where they are unlikely to insure you. Now, I have some other options available in my company, some funeral options that can take care of those things if that's the case. Whereas you pass that point, I have a plan that can insure or at least take care of your funeral expenses for up to 7 members of your family at a manageable cost. I have other options. I even have an insurance company that I work with, that one of my partners, that will reward you for healthy activity even if you already have challenges. So if you already have diabetes, one, they will insure you. Two, if you are a smoker, one, they will also insure you. Three, if you are a little overweight, they will insure you. Now, here's what will happen, is that they will then assist you by giving you some tools to work with to say, okay, well, if you walk 4,000 steps a month, we'll do this. If you walk 5,000 steps, if you go see the doctor every quarter, if you go see the doctor twice a year, those things that form healthy habits, because what we have to change is our lifestyle and mindset toward our health and our money. And so my concerns are both of those things to be true. That if I can make you wealthy, I can say what to do with your money in such a way that you never need money again. I mean, never have to look for it or want for it. But if I don't talk to you about your health situation, all the money in the world doesn't matter. And then if you can be super, super healthy, you can be super, super healthy, right? But you don't have any money to go do the natural things you need to do in life because even as healthy as you are, most often food is not free in urban communities. Now, for some of you who live in, our rural communities, you can go out and you can forage because the earth brings forth the things we need, right? And so you might be in that position, but most of us are not. So it's important that we monitor both those things, and we have affiliated ourselves and aligned ourselves with companies that have those same concerns about the people that we serve.
Okay, I find this really interesting. And one of the reasons I find it interesting is, I mean, I think what you're doing is brilliant. It sounds amazing. It sounds very positive. And one of the things that interests me is because in this country we have a national health service, so we don't need private health care insurance. Now, there's a lot of people at the upper income scale who have private health insurance, but we don't actually need it because the National Health Service will treat anybody and everybody, and it's free at the point of delivery, and it is wonderful. It's a wonderful thing. It's not perfect. There's some serious flaws there, but yeah, it's wonderful. When I got diagnosed with cancer some years ago, I never for one single second thought, can I afford the treatment? I didn't have to think that because I was covered by the National Health Service. Which is a wonderful, wonderful thing. But the government is trying to do it, you know, successive Tory governments are trying to do it down, do it into the ground. And I found out the other day that my local urgent care center has been privatized. I had no idea. As far as I'm aware, there's not been any community consultation whatsoever, because I certainly wasn't aware of any. It's been privatized. So you go in there and you just have to wait hours and hours and hours and hours to be seen, because they may only have two people on duty at any given time because it's a private institution now. So, you know, this is what happens when money and healthcare get mixed up together. It's not for anybody's benefit, really. That's my opinion, and I'm sticking to it. It's not, like I said earlier, when Duane McCulley was giving away information to people how to get off the diabetes meds, he got shut down. The National American Diabetes Association tried to shut him down because they didn't want people coming off their meds. They want people to keep taking those meds forever, even though they don't actually do anything. All right, I'm just going to check because we've got a couple people on the line, and we're going to come back to you, sir, but thank you very much for your contribution. Let's see who's on the line now. Hi, welcome to the show. Who's calling, please? Good afternoon. This is Jana. Welcome to the show. Well, I'll tell you what. If you want to, say something or you want to ask a question, press 1, and we'll see that your hand is up, and we will invite you to join the conversation. Okay, so are you saying that the majority of people, the reason why they don't get health insurance before they get sick is everything to do with income? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that some of it has to do with income. In fact, a lot of it has to do with income. But the biggest factor more than income really is our mental perspective regarding healthcare. And so those outdated stereotypes which have been adopted by us cause us to have behavior, do things that are negative to our health, not just the eating, not just that, but the fact that we don't go see the doctor because we're prideful about
this. Right, the fact that we got to be
strong. We have fear.
And this is how
we
find strength.
Right.
And men from all different backgrounds tend to do this as well. They tend to avoid going to a doctor. I think part of it is fear as well. They don't want to know what's wrong.
Right.
So they don't go to the doctor.
But here's the other fear, guys. You don't want to hear the bad news, true. But here's the other fear, right? It's because economics are so vitally important. We have one stream of income, maybe two streams of income in our household. They are absolutely necessary for our survival. So I can't take a chance as a wife or a husband that I'm going to be put out of commission or out of earning potential for any significant time for my family. So now what? Because I don't. That goes back to understanding how to deal with money. That's the other thing.
Okay.
So how to deal with money so that when you have the when you have these things, you can afford to make these choices. You know what an emergency is? We're talking about an emergency fund, right? And so here's how I describe an emergency. Anything you don't have the funds to deal with is now an emergency.
That makes sense.
If I have a flat tire, but I have money in my pocket and I got AAA, that's not an emergency. It's just a flat tire. But if you have a flat tire, no cash, no insurance, no AAA, that's an emergency. Your transportation is out of commission.
Because you're not prepared.
But it's a money issue. You see what I mean? Because you didn't have a financial wherewithal of what to do with what you had. You kept thinking that you needed more money before you made the right decision. So a lot of times you make poor decisions because you're like, this is all I have. It's not enough to do everything, so I'm just going to do this. And so while you're waiting to have more money so you can make better decisions, the decisions that you make are actually keeping you from having more money.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And I think the thing is as well, certainly in our communities, is that we tend to have short-termism, right? I always think either we can have short-term gain for long-term pain, or we can have short-term pain for long-term gain. And we tend to choose the short-term gain for long-term pain. And I think a lot of that has to do with psychic trauma, African-American psychic trauma. We want to be relieved of that pain now. We're not so much thinking about the future because we want to be relieved of that pain now. What do you think?
I agree. And in a lot of urban communities, here's the other issue, is that when you say the word long term, so let me speak for myself, okay? As a kid growing up in the city, I never imagined I would ever be 57 years old. So when I was 15 and I was 20 or 19, I wasn't planning for ever becoming 57. It made no sense. So I didn't grow up with that vision. I didn't grow up with that vision of being.
And apparently, from what I'm told, a lot of black parents don't say to their children things like, "When you go to university, it's like at the last minute, mom and dad have decided to go to university, and I haven't planned for that." Whereas my parents, when I was growing up, would always say to me, "When you go to college," they never said if you go to college. They say when you go to college.
Well, And that's a cult. That's an economic and cultural thing as well. So when I was a kid, my mother dreamed of me going to college, but she never saw any way for that to happen.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So they both worked two jobs or what have you. My mother worked in a shirt laundry. Look, in real life, in the 20th century, where she got paid less than $1 an hour. She was driving a car. And she got paid less than $1 an hour. They got paid 20 cents a shirt, right?
Oh, my God.
So what I'm saying that is to say that her dream for me was to say, man, if you can grow up and get a good city job, if you can grow up and become a policeman or a fireman or somebody who works for the city, because that was the ultimate in Chicago, that was ultimate job position. But she had no dream of me
security.
Going.
Once you got a job for security, then you got security for the rest of your life.
Exactly. So that was her dream for me, to grow up and get a job, get a good job with the city. But that turned out not to be my dream, right? And that's
the thing. We don't necessarily have the same dreams that our parents have, do we?
we can see
a little bit further because we've had a few more advantages than they've had.
Here's what we need to have, though. Here's what I was just talking about this morning on a blog post, is that a part of this whole thing is valuing who you are, but don't make excuses for who you are. So valuing the fact that I'm okay, who I am is enough, but I know I got to be better. It's okay.
Okay.
It's okay for me to want to be better. It's okay for me to want to lose weight. That doesn't mean I'm ashamed. It means I recognize my situation. It's not. Mm-hmm. Don't fall for this thing where they're telling you that, you know what I mean, you're a big girl, you're a big guy, we're proud of you. Yes, we're proud of you. But what I'm not proud of is if you're in that situation and you have high blood pressure, diabetes, you know what I mean, your heart is strained. If you are whatever size you are and those things are not present, you're healthy. You're just a big girl or a big guy. But recognize what good health is and strive for those things and not make those excuses. recognize what good financial health is and strive for those things. So if
right.
I only make
but if you're a big person, I mean, you know, when I was younger, I just thought I would live forever, like young people tend to do. But, you know, even if you may be healthy now as a young person, you need to look towards the longer term, and this is what we tend not to do. Because, you know, these health issues, they develop over time. They don't just turn up one day.
That is true. And look, let me tell you something. When they discover whatever it is they're putting on those McDonald's fries, I believe mm-hmm. that the FDA is going to have to make it illegal, right? Because we eat stuff, right? Because I got that
thing.
Not
right? just McDonald's. Let's just put it like this, right? It's not only McDonald's that's
right.
the problem.
Well, I call it, I mean, I know fast food is a period, but I'm pretty strong in a lot of areas, but I fall prey to McDonald's fries, which is why I get down on them so bad. But,
okay.
So look, but here's the thing, is that what they have done is they've fooled us into thinking that the faster solution is the most, not even the most healthy solution, but the most economically viable solution.
Yeah,
so I don't
right.
have enough
it's
money
not.
To go to the grocery store.
Not.
I don't have enough money to go to the grocery store, and the grocery store, by the way, is not nearby. But guess what is nearby? McDonald's. Guess what
mm-hmm.
I can get at McDonald's?
Yep.
Well, I used to get at McDonald's a hamburger for $1 or $2 or whatever.
Yeah,
now, if I go to
cheap,
the grocery
yeah.
store, yeah, well, that was used to be. I think now you spend like $5 if you go get one. And
mm-hmm.
it was horrible.
Yep.
I mean, but now we have to face the fact that making those tough choices, and this is what I'm saying. I'm going to stop talking because I talk a lot.
I'm going to have to bring in my other caller soon. I'm looking forward to speaking with her too. But I'm
yeah,
enjoying this.
Absolutely.
You've got a lot to say that's really valuable for us.
So what my job is in the short term is to help people to make better decisions financially
great.
And to be able to see further in the future. My job is to make sure that they have access to health care, to life insurance and things like that they thought they didn't
mm-hmm.
have, irregardless of their physical situation. No matter who you are, there's something out here for you, and I
okay.
try to make it my business to have it available for you. No family needs to be ever left behind.
Okay, that's
amazing.
Pretty positive. And I'm going to bring in my other caller now because I've got someone who's hanging on the line. So
let me open the mic for 407.
Yeah. Hi. Welcome to the show. Area code 407. Who's calling, please?
Thank you. This is Beata, your Friday morning.
Oh, hi, Beata. How are you doing?
Sunday night. I'm doing well. Thank you, Zana. And when I heard the word diabetes, I had to call in because I did a show yesterday, and several of the callers were sharing the dietary habits of their grandparents and their mothers and their great grandparents, and we realize the slave mentality that all of us observed in our parents and grandparents was partly what they were eating. We talked about how many parts of the pig or all parts of the pig
that's
that
right.
were consumed
pretty
by
much.
Our grandparents and our parents back
yeah.
in the day. And we
yeah.
realized that the consequences of that was diabetes. We
okay.
our grandparents and our parents ate a lot of animal flesh, and thank goodness we talked about the weeds of collard greens and all the greens that were thrown
right,
in there that saved them. But what we realized is that we have to stop eating like our grandparents and our parents.
Okay.
So in order for us to overcome diabetes and all these diseases we're talking about, we just have to do a 180-degree turn, in my opinion, that my callers demonstrated that resulted in diabetes was the dietary habits and the stress that they were under, either on the plantation or off the plantation. But a lot of it has been mental adjustments that were
mm-hmm,
not made
mm-hmm.
from the plantation to the urban area to continue to eat the pig and all the parts and the chickens and all the parts and all the animal
yeah.
parts. Now
it's also because we're so sedentary now.
Society,
I mean, my mother, I'm not sure if she had diabetes or not, but no one's ever said to me that she did. But she was nearly 99 when she died. She passed away about a year ago, just over a year ago. And, no, just under a year ago, sorry. And she lived to be nearly 99, eating all that pig. So it's not just what we're eating. It's also the fact that we have such a sedentary lifestyle. But I'll tell you something. I strongly recommend that you read this book by Dwayne McCullough. And I'll drop the link to you, Riata. I'm going to put it on this show as well, the link to his book. He has taught probably thousands of people now how to come off the meds and regulate our blood sugar level, because diabetes is, as he says, a disease of cellular decay, cellular damage. And what we have to do is repair the damage. And there are certain foods we can eat, which is like what you've been talking about, the greens, right? Things like broccoli, Brussels sprouts, spinach, all of those cleanse the liver. And that helps to repair the cells. And that's how we get rid of diabetes. When I was in hospital in 2017, someone said to me, do you want to see the diabetes nurse? Now, at that point, my blood sugar level was well within the range of normal. And they said to me, do you want to see the diabetes nurse? And I said, no. And they sent her anyway. She sat by my bedside, and she said, it's not possible to reverse diabetes after the first year or two after diagnosis. I didn't realize, and I just said, yes, it is. Yes, I can reverse it. I didn't even realize I'd done it at that point. I didn't even realize I had done it. But this is a nurse. This is someone who's trained, who's educated. But she's still telling me you can't reverse diabetes. You can find, if you go onto YouTube or onto Facebook, you can find Death to Diabetes, which is the name of his book. And it is excellent. And we can take our health. It's down to us. It's down to us to take our health into our own hands. We can't rely on other people to do it. We have to do it.
Yeah, and I agree. Son, I agree that you can have people live to be 9,900 and they eat all their vanilla products. Their stress, I'm betting the stress in their life was a lot lower when they have that type of dietary habit. You can't
And of course, during slavery, people were working so hard. That's why some of the oldest people in the United States are black people, former enslaved people, because they worked so hard and that kept them healthy even though they were on a rubbish diet.
I've got a quick question for Ken before we take another break, because, you know, your company insures people even if they have diabetes, but then you also give them good health tips because, you know, insurance companies really aren't trying to have to pay the claim. So is it in your best interest for people to change their diet and understand that they can reverse diabetes and actually get off of diabetes so that they don't have it anymore? So would it be in your company's best interest for them to know that it is reversible? Even matter of fact, one of our hosts, our Monday host, Zelda, she's written a book about how she got off of diabetes. So is it in your company's best interest for people to know that they can, in fact, reverse diabetes and no longer be diabetic?
So I can speak for my individual company, not for the insurance carriers per se, because to the insurance industry, the insurance industry is not as overall as compassionate. They work numbers. And so what they do working the numbers is they don't mind excluding you, okay? So they don't mind excluding you, and then they don't mind charging you more for the service that they render because of what the numbers say. Now, for me and my company, I recognize it is in our best interest as a company to be able to provide more value to the customer, and as a customer, for our customers to have more value in their life. See, I'm a life insurance person, a health insurance person. Most people think of that, they think of death insurance. What happens when I die? Okay, but really, the stuff that I'm most concerned about is how to use this stuff to let you have a better life while you're alive. And then, you know, pass on a legacy, that's a secondary thing. It's a great thing. But that's a secondary thing. The first thing I want you to do is for you to see how life insurance can benefit your life. And, yes, it is in our best interest. And I, like I said, I have a partnership with a company now called FinFit for Life. And what we do with that partnership is that they are in the business of helping you, giving you the tools, motivating you financially to be able to do the right things for your health, to be able to get exercise, to be able to see the doctor regularly and not in case of emergency, not just in case of emergency, to be able to maintain healthy conditions. As you do, it will actually reward you with more value for doing the right thing that you should be doing all the time. So I love this new partnership, and it goes along with the other things that we've been doing to be able to help people who have these conditions already to be able to make sure that they can take care of themselves better and prepare for their families at the same time.
Right. Right, that sounds really positive. I'm loving what you're saying. I'm really loving it. So we're going to take a little break now. We'll be back shortly. We've got another caller on the line.
And Jana, our second guest, Sherelle Withers, she's actually making a presentation at a health conference today, but she says she's going to try to step away as soon as her presentation is over and call in. So, Ken, I know I suggested the first hour, but if you're able to stay with us after the break, we'd love to have you continue to educate us and inspire us. Are you able to stay? Will your time permit?
Sure, I can stay for a little bit. I got you.
All right.
Lovely.
Let us know.
Thank you.
We understand. You know, you got clients and stuff to see today. But we'll be right back after this quick break. And if you're listening online and want to join this conversation, if you want to share some of your health challenges, or even what you've observed in the healthcare industry and maybe not being as sensitive to your needs, and you think it might be racially or gender-based, give us a call and give us your story, 515-605-9325. Press 1 if you're ready to speak, and we'll come right to you and get your thoughts. Our host today is Jana joining us live from London talking about health inequalities, women's health, and black health. How do we take responsibility for our own health care? We'll be right back after this quick break, so stay with us.
Our kids.
What happens when a group of people are kidnapped from their homes, smuggled away in chains, and held captive in a foreign land where they are tortured, raped, and forced to perform hard labor by the lash of a whip and under the constant threat of death? Slavery. The African-American psychic trauma. What happened to the doctors, writers, scientists, builders, educators, and spiritual leaders from Africa's golden age? Who did they really capture and sell into slavery? Are all African-Americans suffering from psychic trauma because of a conspiracy to hide their true identities? Do you have psychic trauma? Take the test on page 22 of the book and see. Order it online today at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. And get your personally autographed copy of the book, Slavery, the African-American Psychic Trauma.
Our kids are the future and should not be left behind. One person should not decide what is the best for our 77 communities. Politicians must work together for our kids' best interests. They deserve a safe education with resources that meet every student need. Let's rebuild and restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of Chicago. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for mayor.
What if you could live to be 120 years old and remain active, healthy, alert, and vibrant? Our bodies are made up of cells that are constantly rejuvenating. So if we take proper care of our cells, we can literally defy aging. Join us every Tuesday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time to learn about cell care from Susan Essentials on the Female Solution Blog Talk Radio Show. Learn how to help your body and your cells feel rejuvenated each day through proper nutrition, sleep, frequency medicine, and many unconventional methods of self-care. I'm Jody Susan. Join me and my amazing guests by calling in at 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak. We'll help you achieve a breakthrough in your health today.
Solution Global Radio TV Show. Today is Success Strategies with Jana. We're talking about health inequalities, women's health, and black health. And, Ken, I think you were giving us that insight on the financial incentives that that actually exist in the health care business. I know a lot of companies will not insure someone with a lot of pre-existing conditions or even things like obesity and the questionnaires sometimes that you have to answer before you can even get insurance. Like you say, you know, they look at the numbers and what's the least likely person they'll have to actually pay for health care.
Well, you know what? I'm going to be honest with you. This particular program is the only insurer that has a program like it that I'm aware of in the United States. Now, there's other things that, like you mentioned, height and weight, right? A lot of times we have come to not be real about what height and weight looks like or should look like. Now, truth of the matter is we've been presented images in the media of women who are too thin to be healthy or shaped too irregularly to have naturally occurred in nature, right? So we have those issues, right? But at the same time, we've gone to the other extreme of saying, you know, that's not an achievable model. So in some cases, we've abandoned the search. And in some cases, not. I'm not saying this is a disparity against women or men, but what I think is that when we see, when the brothers looks on television, he sees the guy with the 8-pack, look, I got no packs. I got zero packs. But I still have to live. I still got to do the best I can to live a healthy life. I owe that to my family. I owe that to myself. And look, a lot of us walk around sick and don't even know it. I mean, I had diabetes. When I discovered that I had diabetes, I had got to the absolute limit of how I could feel in terms of uncomfortable and ill, really, until I actually walked into a hospital. And when I walked into the hospital, they looked at me and they said, "Did you drive?" And I said, "Of course." And they go, "Oh my God," right? They take my blood sugar and they immediately rush me into the hospital. I mean, they rush me like I'm still conscious, right? I'm still conscious. And they're rushing me. They're calling people and whatnot because my glucose was 700. Now, so they were thinking I should have been in a coma, right?
Wow.
But I had been walking around with numbers like that probably for quite a while. And just like, you know, feel like, okay, well, I'm sleepy or I'm uncomfortable or whatever it is, whatever excuses I gave myself for not going to the doctor. At that time, I don't think I had insurance. So, you know, I'm like, I don't want to go to the county because the county means I got to wait all day. Who's got time for that, right? And for those of you who are not familiar, the county, Cook County Hospital provides as a healthcare system that has a mandate to treat everyone who shows up, regardless of whether you have insurance or not. But because of that, that's as close as we get to public health, publicly provided health care. Because of that, the experience is often less than optimal. How about I say that? And so,
that's a nice way to say it.
that was the best I could do.
If somebody else is bleeding more than you, they'll let you sit there. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was the absolute best I could do was say less than optimal. But so what I'm saying is that I ended up going to the hospital because I felt so horrible, and then they ended up rushing me in under emergency circumstances because my blood sugar level was at a point where I should have been, like, in a coma or asleep, right? So I'm saying that from experience to say that all the things I gave myself as excuses, you know, we don't got no insurance, we don't want to wait at the county, you know, it'll get better, we'll do better, you know, I got to do this, and we never did any of those things until I got to the hospital and they started treating me. I never did any of those things that in my mind I said I was going to get to tomorrow, because a lot of times, because we're surviving something, we think that it's okay. We say, well, I survived it, so it's okay. Like a guy who's smoking, like you just mentioned, your mom living to, you said, almost 99? That's amazing. I have family members that have lived to 95, 96, 97 and smoked every day, mm-hmm. right? And said it with pride, right? I've been smoking since I was 7 years old. I've been smoking since I was, and said that with pride. And the fact that they survived became the evidence that what they were doing was okay. They
right.
used their survival. They used their survival to say that that was the mandate, that that was okay. And other people see that as an example and a model. And the reality of that is not an example. That is the fact that you survived is an anomaly, and we thank God that you did survive, but you did nothing to ensure your survival. So when it comes to insurance and where that's concerned, how this is most important to us is because insurance is not just a vehicle to maintain your health. It is a vehicle to be able to maintain your financial health, transfer wealth in the community, transfer what is not – wealth happens when somebody does something with somebody else. What is that? What do I mean by that? In every ethnic group, not just African Americans, but Europeans, whoever you are, the way it's transferred is mama did something or daddy did something and left something for the son or daughter, who then did something and left something for the son or daughter. But in the midst of that process, they learn some things on how to utilize that which was left to them to be able
right.
to enhance it, grow it, and make it better. And that's what that's a challenge of what I have to teach every day is how to utilize, if you got €5 or, you know, or $5, how to use your $5. Look,
right.
don't worry about till you get 10. How do I use your 5 to make your life better? Let's do that first. And what I found is this. I'm also a minister, so every once in a while I have a biblical quote that will just come out. Don't worry about it. It happens. Okay,
I wasn't worried about that. Don't worry.
Yeah.
I've got a question though, because we're talking about insurance and people being covered, and I know President Obama went through this when he was Senator Obama. But he talked about his mother when she was diagnosed with cancer, having paid for insurance for years. They then said, no, you have to prove it's not a pre-existing condition. And when you've got a cancer diagnosis, I know from experience, you do not want to be dealing with all that paperwork. That's not what you want to be
yeah.
thinking about. So what I'm wondering is, where does Obamacare come into the mix?
So what they call Obamacare, which is, so to be honest, I got to share this with you. There's no such thing as Obamacare. We all know that for real, right? So it's the Affordable Health Care Act, and they said
right.
Obamacare is associated with that person, so we would have a negative idea about it, right? But in reality, it's the Affordable Health Care Act. Now, here's what happens with the Affordable Health Care Act. It has made it so that there is health care when you're under 65. In America, we have something called Medicare, which is available to you as a part of your social benefit after
sure.
you reach the age of 65. But before
sure.
65, you're out here in the free healthcare market. And so
right.
what the Affordable Health Care Act does is it allows you to receive some governmental assistance based on your current income level.
Right.
Okay? So, again, that is some governmental assistance based on your current income level. So now, because of that, people who couldn't afford healthcare at all now have access to health care. Now, in the process of that association, some people who already had health care, who had more income, are now paying a little bit more for the health care that they receive. Okay? Right. But, yeah, that's a downside, right? He's like, well, I don't want to pay a dollar more. But the reality of it is that if we don't share in the cost, the entire economy suffers. What those people don't understand is that before Obamacare, those people before the Affordable Health Care Act, those
mm-hmm.
people still had to go to the hospital. But here's what happened. They waited until they got to the emergency room. There was no pre-care. No, there was no nothing. They waited until they got to the emergency room. And the same thing that cost $6,000 to fix in the emergency room was going to cost $6,000 regardless. So
right.
the key to – and somebody had to cover that cost. So who
right.
do you think paid that cost before the Affordable Health Care Act? Everybody else that had insurance.
Mm-hmm.
The people who didn't have insurance did not bear that cost because guess what? If the insurance cost went up, they didn't matter because they had no insurance. So now
right.
by mandating that more people have insurance, that cost is borne overall through the entire healthcare system. So they just got to give it time. You're not going to fix You're not going to fix 50 years of inequity with 5 or 10 years of action. And that's the problem.
Yeah.
People are impatient, and we want everything to happen in a microwave. We want whatever was wrong, fix it now, and then everything to be hunky-dory. Well, it's not going to work like that. But what we have done, though, is this. There's a competitive interest involved, too, in terms of healthcare, right? Now healthcare companies are competing for your business. That means
okay.
that they start to put in checks and balances on themselves because they gotta have the best price. They got to fight for your business. Does that make sense?
Okay, well, that's a positive thing, that competition, I think. That sounds positive. But there's a member of my family. She's a retired doctor. She used to be a pediatrician working with newborns, neonates. And she spent a lot of her time as a doctor on the phone arguing with the HBOs. What are they called? HMOs. Sorry, not HBOs.
HMOs. Yeah.
She spent a lot of time on the phone arguing with them because they didn't want to pay for the best possible care. They wanted to pay for the cheapest
Correct.
One.
Correct. And so that's a function of business. So, look, I mean, this is the reality. It boils down to, we want to be mad at everybody, and I do. I want to be mad, too, right? But here's the thing we got to remember is that their job is not, the health insurance company, their job is not to maintain your health. That's not what their job is. Their job is to make sure that their job is to make sure that the people that pay them are able to receive health care, right? So how do they do that? How do they really figure that out? So their job becomes to negotiate the best price that they can spend on it to make sure that they can cover the most people. And so that's in contrast in America, or especially in America, that's in contrast with the medical profession, right? Because
because the medical profession is to get you the best possible health care.
Well, it's to get you the best possible health care at the best possible cost. So remember, I can't just pass off on the insurance company, right? Because I got to remember that the pharmaceutical companies are manufacturing a pill for 15 cents and selling it for $15. So
it's a scandal.
Right?
I think it's really scandalous.
So all of that is a part of the process. The doctor can't help the fact that the cost of that pill, and you need that pill, the cost of that pill should be $2. When I go to the hospital, I get charged $20 or $25 for a Tylenol that I can buy a bottle of 100 of out of Walgreens or CVS. So that's a part of the health care system.
But to me, as far as I'm concerned, that's just
shameful.
milking people who are vulnerable.
So here's what the insurance companies face with. They face with the fact that is happening. So I'm saying when we talk about arguing with the HMOs and things like that, we're not arguing with them in a vacuum. We argue with them in the fact that is happening. You're being overcharged. So the insurance company's job is also to say, look, I don't want to be overcharged. I don't want to pay too much for that, whatever it is. And you say, well, the best possible outcome could come if we add in gold-plated tips that we add on to our whatever we're adding into you, right? That's the best possible outcome. They said, well, look, what are the numbers? What are the numbers saying?
Yeah.
You said, well, okay, most people are going to survive with this and this and this. And they say, well, let's do this, this, and this. But that's not the best possible outcome. I'm not here for, I can't afford the best possible outcome on every patient, or I will be out of business. Is it more important to be able to provide care?
It's overcharging, and then, you know, basically they're in business to make money. I mean, all businesses are in business to make money, but that doesn't mean they necessarily have to gouge people.
I have a question, Ken, because, I'm seeing so many, it seems like it's like an epidemic of amputations in our community, and it seems like doctors will just decide that you're going to go, once they see that you have diabetes, they'll see that they'll decide there's going to be a progression. I've even had this happen to friends where they're told, okay, well, we're going to treat you as long as we can. We'll give you this medication, but eventually you're going to lose a limb. And they plant that thought in the mind.
Right.
And eventually,
happens? It's interesting because this is what Delane McCulley, who wrote Death to Diabetes, this is how his story begins. He woke up out of a coma, lying in a hospital bed, and they were saying, we need to take your legs. And if we take both of them today, then you'll save $200. And fortunately for him, because he'd just woken out of a coma, so he was a little bit confused. And he's like, what do you mean, move my leg to the other side of the bed? And his, fortunately for him, his daughter was there. His daughter said, what do you mean remove? You mean amputate. And they said, we don't like to use the word amputate. We prefer to say remove. And she just went, you are not amputating my father's legs. Right? She took over, and his mother took over, and the women in his house made sure that he survived, and he still has both legs all these years later.
Yeah, I've had friends who had to go through that, where some, where no one advocated for them, and they got their legs amputated. Some who did, and they...
Oh, gosh, that's awful. If it's not necessary, then it's just awful. And to me, it's like, this comes back to, we need to look after ourselves. This is what Dwayne McCulley learned from his mother and his daughter. We have to take care of ourselves.
So Ken, are people more likely to have those kind of unnecessary operations if they do have insurance or if they don't have insurance? Because sometimes I see that when a person has insurance, depending on what the coverage is, if it covers everything, then the hospitals will give them every kind of expensive procedure necessary in order to, you know, get paid because they got insurance.
Right.
But then sometimes if they don't have insurance, they don't give them much care. So what have you observed that tends to happen?
So let's note this. The amputation is not the most expensive process or option.
Okay.
And so if you don't have insurance, it's likely that that may be an option that they consider because you won't be able to afford further care.
Right.
The concern is that in diabetes, the other things that contribute to diabetes, which are, you know, poor kidney function, things like that, when you get to neuropathy, it is the kind of thing that it eases up on you if you're not attentive. What I mean by that is you will start to lose feeling in parts of your foot. You'll start to lose feeling in your fingertips. And we are so accustomed to being adjustment to that. We're making adjustments to that. We're making adjustments for losing fingers. I don't really feel that anymore. You know, my wife used to say, my wife used to be upset with me because I could put my hand in what would ordinarily be scalding water and I didn't notice, right?
Mm-hmm.
But those things, and for a second, my mind said, well, that's just the way my hands are. That's just the way my, you know, I'm like, wait a minute, hold up. That's not the way things are supposed to work.
Right.
So that made me more serious about my care. But look, in the case of neuropathy, which is what causes amputation, that's why they cut your legs off, is because you have lost sensitivity and those parts of your leg or feet are not getting blood flow. That's supposed to the only reason why they cut them off, right? But sometimes they prescribe this thing as a preemptive measure because they're saying, well, the amount of tissue which has been damaged, they're assessing that it can't be rehabilitated. But we have found that in real life, if I would rather take my chances with some natural remedies before I go to my legs or feet or toes or whatever. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And I'm talking to my guest today, Ken Atwood, who's an agency manager for Diabetic Insurance Solutions. And he's given us a lot of really good information about how we can look after ourselves in terms of our health, and the fact that looking after ourselves in terms of our health often also means looking after our wealth. So we need to find strategies to do this, to be able to do this.
Yes,
we've got to take responsibility for our own health. Is that right?
We got to take responsibility for our own health and our own finances.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times culturally we talk about, when I say culturally, I am an African American. And so when I say culturally, a lot of times we talk about things that are systemically problematic, that are systemically wrong. And there are a lot of things that are systemic issues. But I will explain it to you like I explained a game of, like I like to play chess. So I use this as an example. If you're familiar with the game of chess, it sets up on a board, and there are a number of pieces that you need to have. But sometimes you start a game, in order for people to play me, a lot of times I got to say, well, I'm going to play with a few pieces down. I'm going to play short, take a few pieces off the board so I have less to work with than you do. But my objective is still to win. So what I liken that to is in this situation is that I'm not saying that you don't have less. I'm not saying that you don't face the problems you face every day. But having said that, we have to ask the next question, now what? Having said the fact that I don't have enough money, now what? What do I do?
Yeah.
Having said the fact that
we need some
solutions. So we need some solutions. And those solutions are often incremental and not monumental. So what I mean by that is it's as simple as me starting to say, you know what, I'm not going to eat this thing. Like, it's as simple as saying, I'm not going to go to a fast food restaurant. I'm going to take my, if I need them to be a little hungry, a little longer, I'm going to make the extra steps to go to the store and put something on the oven or suffer that extra little time to make that happen for me and my family. It's
okay. Yeah, but this is what it takes. And also, sometimes old habits die hard. We have got another caller on the line. I'm just going to see who's on the line. Who's joining us?
Okay.
Welcome. Area code 314, who's on the line?
It's Bianchi. How are you guys doing?
Hi, welcome.
Have
you
Naima,
been listening
I have
today?
Everything's cool. I had a friend who was diabetic, and I knew her for a while. So one day I went over her home, and I said, look, you can get off of this. So I went in her refrigerator. She was taking the shots. Went in her refrigerator and looked in there and started throwing stuff away.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And got her on a diet that, you know, had been recommended, kale, and garlic soup and all that. She done that for about 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, and her numbers came down to normal or
better.
But she was afraid to get off of that medication and those shots.
Yeah.
So what do you do in a case like that? Beat somebody over the head or what?
I think you need to show them a few of D. Ray McCulley's videos on YouTube. This guy wrote Death to Diabetes. I learned loads from watching these videos about how we have to look after ourselves, that we can actually reverse our diabetes. We can reverse it. And those meds don't do anything. You know, the only thing they do is artificially lower our blood sugar level. That's all they do. This is what Duane McCulley says. I mean, his book is sort of like a Bible for me because I just think the work he's doing is just really, really wonderful. He's educating people. He's educating the medical community about diabetes, right? That I mean, I'm talking about type 2, not type 1. I'm talking about type 2. We can reverse our diabetes and we can come off the meds. But sometimes there's a process of education that we have to go through.
Well, I know we got to take our last break, but the point that Bianchi was making, I have seen that so often, and it's kind of a brainwashing where not letting go of the medication. We're made to believe that the medication is keeping us alive when, in fact, it's lining the pockets of the pharmaceutical companies. It's all about the business. Medicine was really about healing, then they would prescribe things that would end the problem so that we didn't have to take the medication. But
to
I think that's...
They just want us to keep taking it forever, and that is not the best thing for the body. That's not the best thing for the body.
But we're conditioned to be in fear. So Ken, I know we've kept you a half hour over. Before we take a break, I do want to give you a chance to give our audience our contact information. And also, Jean, I need you to know that Sherelle texted me to let me know that she's still making the presentation at the health conference and she's not going to be able to finish before the end of the show. But she definitely wants to come.
That's a shame, but I understand. Maybe she can come on another time.
Yes, definitely, because she has quite a juicy story to share. But, Ken, please give us your contact information just in case, you know, if you have to leave us suddenly, we want to make sure people know how to reach your agency, how if they've got more questions. How do they get in
You can actually reach me by phone. My telephone number is area code 773-703-1215. You can also, my appointment center is called Tribal Wealth United. And that's because I do believe that as a group, as a family, as a tribe, and we all are part of the human tribe, our success is measured by the success of the tribe. And so you can reach me at tribalwealthunitedonline.com. I mean, it's tribalwealthunited.com. You can reach me there. You can set an appointment with me, or you can leave a message for me there. But my direct phone number is 773-703-1215. You can reach me on that number at any time. And I appreciate any interest and what have you. And I'm here to help. That's my job. I'm here to serve.
Well, I think you've given us some great information. Are you going to be able to stay to the end of the show? What do you think? You're welcome to if you want to.
Well, at this point, I can. So I'm good.
Great.
I can
tribalwealthunited.com. I put that up on the screen for those who want to go to your website. I think it's tremendous that you are providing health care coverage for people who suffer with such a very widely spread health challenge such as diabetes. And if we could just get people to change what they eat, you know, it seems so simple. You know, I mean, they have plant-based foods that they can season up to taste like your favorite pork chops. Trust me. I mean, you can get that same flavor and not have to eat the garbage. You really can. So that's tribalwealthunited.com. We're going to take one last break, and we'll be right back. And we want you to stick and stay. Don't stray away. If you're on our switchboard, got a question for our guest, Ken Atwood, please press 1. And that lets us know to open your mic and get your thoughts. We'll be right back.
Crime in Chicago continues to increase. Communities and politicians must come together to make a change. No one person can solve these problems by themselves. But I believe together we can make progress. Let's provide job training, economic growth, and invest into our 77 community. Let's rebuild and restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of Chicago. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for Mayor.
Tune in to Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green on Thursdays at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time to hear great topics and stories on grief and turn you into victory. Join Dr. Debbie Green to listen to stories of triumph and learn how to overcome. You are not alone in your life, and there is hope in the darkest hour. This is your time to learn strategies and solutions to improve your life. It's your time. So join Dr. Debbie Green with Soulful Solutions and call in on Thursday at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time at 515-605-9325 with comments and questions. Look to hear from you real soon.
Do you worry about finances, family, health, job, relationships? Are you in pain? Do you feel stuck? If you answered yes to any of these questions, help is available. Don't worry, you're not alone. It's part of the human process. You only feel this way because you haven't mastered the voices in your head. No hype, just down-to-earth, solid, workable tools and techniques that you can practice daily. It's really food for the soul, whether you want to learn how not to worry about anything, reverse type 2 diabetes, publish a book, promote your product or service, or just make extra money. To take advantage of the deal of the day, go to ZeldaSpeaks.com or call 312-409-6619. Mention promo code The Female Solution and get free shipping. That's ZeldaSpeaks.com or 312-409-6619. Stop worrying today. Visit ZeldaSpeaks.com.
Mm. Okay, we're back. This is the final segment of the Success Strategy Show with Jana. That's me. Today we're talking about racial and gender inequalities in health, in healthcare. And I'm talking to my guest, Ken Atwood, who's the agency manager at Diabetic Insurance Solutions. And sorry, what was the other name that you just gave us, Ken?
So I operate a couple of businesses that all kind of come together for the same services.
Okay.
So there's Tribal Wealth United, which is my educational arm. So I utilize that. I teach courses on finance, education, and so forth, teaching people basically the same idea of really how to deal, how to start from where you are to get what you need, instead of waiting to get you off of, to move you forward. Because if nothing changes, then guess what? Nothing changes, right? And now they can also reach me to just actually schedule like an appointment to talk to me, like a free conversation, just have a conversation with me. Other than calling me on the phone, you get directly to me. I have an appointment page, and it's called financialpowermeeting.com. Financialpowermeeting.com. It sounds just like it is. financialpowermeeting.com. Here's what happens. The reason why I have all these avenues now is because I'm becoming aware of social media, right? I really wasn't. I'm an old guy. So old guys don't do social media well, right?
I'm probably older than you, and I do social media. So.
And so I'm just trying to make myself available from different avenues.
Great.
My key here is my message is always the same. Okay, even though maybe coming from a different avenue or I teach different classes about specific things, but my message is the same, right? Is that wherever you are, whatever you have, now is the time to start. Now, the other thing is that your finances being healthy and your physical body being healthy are necessary components to happiness. Like one without the other is not a complete picture. So the things that we talk about are always going to be surrounding your financial wellness, your spiritual well-being, your mental well-being. All those things kind of fall into place. And if you look at the conversation we had today, and we want to trace it back to its original roots, original where these things have an origin, they're in how we think and how we've been taught to think toward our relationship with food, money, and each other. And so what I want to do is I want to help people to rectify those relationships. I want to stop you from going to work for money, because money is not meant to be your employer. It is meant to be employed by you. I want to stop you eating to die and eat to live, right?
Right.
I want to stop those behaviors, and they're connected. People think that they're not connected. Well, you try to live like somebody asked me today. I was sending out a little information regarding the show, and they said, well, it's a women's show. What are you doing on a women's show?
Mm-hmm. Like, what did you say when they asked you that?
I said, well, here's the one thing I know. I know humans, right? And I'm assuming that women are humans too. So we have commonality of concerns and issues. I'm concerned about the things that are going on with my women. I'm concerned.
Right, exactly, because we all have to look after each other.
Well, and then
and men are not banned from this show. Men are welcome to come on this show.
We have more men listening. We have about 70% men in the audience for this show.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's interesting.
You know, that makes sense to me.
That makes sense to me. Listen, a woman is a necessary part of every life. Here's the thing. The trick to it is realizing this, that every life comes from a woman, right? But what I also discovered is that ability to nurture and change and grow ideas, concepts, things also happen in a woman. What do I mean by that? It means that if I get the wrong idea in a woman, or a woman takes in the wrong concept, she'll make that thing multiply. She'll make the wrong thing multiply just as good as she'll make the right thing multiply, because she is a multiplier, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when I desire to speak to her, I desire to commune with her. I desire to get, if everything that I know that is right, I want to share with her, because all those things that are right, she is still a multiplier. She will take that thing that is right, and she will multiply that thing out. She will take a house and make it a home, right? She'll take whatever you give her, whatever you take, whatever women take in, you will take that thing, and you will multiply it, and it is your nature. And so I accept that, understand that, appreciate that, and thank God for that every day.
Okay, Ken, I'm going to ask you a question about something I mentioned at the top of the show, which is there's this organization called Women with Coronary Artery Disease.
Yes.
And or with peripheral artery disease. And they're saying that they are having more challenging experiences compared to their male counterpart in relation to access to health care, emotional factors surrounding healthcare interactions, and relationships with their physician, which I translate as saying that doctors don't listen to us, right? They don't listen to women, like a lot of men. Do not listen to women. I'm not trying to stereotype here, but I'm just wondering, what are your thoughts about that? Have you seen inequalities between the way women patients are treated and the way male patients are treated?
I mean, I see disparities in treatment both across racial lines and across physical lines, geographic and economics. I mean, there are disparities that you'll find in treatment for multiple reasons all over the healthcare system, okay? But when it comes to certain things, for instance, an economic example, right? In my city, in Chicago, there is Northwestern Hospital, which is a treatment, which is a teaching hospital. And so a lot of my insurance clients don't want health insurance that does not allow them to go to Northwestern. They don't want it. They would rather pay more for whatever else is available. If Northwestern is not included, they don't want to have nothing to do with it, right?
Okay. Northwestern's reputation, presumably.
Exactly. So when it comes down to economics too, that hospital provides a certain level of care. But what if you can't go to Northwestern? What if you got to go to a place like, these names won't mean anything to you if you're not familiar with our area. But say you want to go to some place like Jackson Park or like Providence Hospital. Those are hospitals that are located in urban communities. Those tend to have outcomes, no disrespect to the people who work there, but they tend to have a reputation of outcomes with a lesser degree of success and care.
Right.
And
so are there reasons for that?
The reasons for that are probably economic, right?
Right.
Because the people are going there because they don't feel the option to be at a Northwestern, not because they feel like this place will provide the same level of care. Now, whether it does or not, it's not for me to say, right? But
people's perception is. And you say I may not relate to it because I don't live in Chicago and I don't know Chicago.
Right.
I live in London, and I tell you, I live in South London. There's a big hospital, a national hospital, literally about 10 minutes walk from where I live, but I refuse to be treated there. And I've been there on a number of occasions. So I want to be treated at a hospital in North London. And I only went there originally because I knew I wanted to see a doctor, a specialist. I found out he was based there. He used to be based at my local hospital. He's the head of his department now, and he's the one who eventually diagnosed my cancer at a very, very early stage. So I'm so glad that I insisted. It was really hard to get an appointment, but I insisted. So, you know, I get it. Different parts of town, different hospitals in different parts of town may be offering different forms of health care. There are some clinicians at my local hospital who are excellent. But overall, I do not feel safe when I walk in the doors. I don't really feel safe when I walk in the doors of any hospital, apart from the one in North London where I was treated, where my cancer was diagnosed and treated. Every time I walk in the door, I feel like I'm going to be looked after. Isn't that what you want when you walk in the door of a hospital?
I have a question, and maybe both of you all have an opinion about this. Because a hospital is a hospital, and you figure people who work there are working there because they care about people. So why is it
that
areas where people make less money, the health care professionals don't seem to care as much for them. Is it, are the healthcare professionals getting paid less money who work in the lower income areas, or do the healthcare professionals care less about the people because they don't see them as valuable because they make less money? I mean, is it an attitude of the staff, or are they actually getting paid less if they work in a lower income area? What is the reason for the difference in the healthcare service? What,
I just think
thoughts?
It's to do with the way the hospital is run, the way the hospitals are run. I mean, as I've said, we have a lot of communication problems, not just in that hospital, but across the board in the NHS. And there are other issues, but, I mean, the one in North London that I prefer probably has more money coming in. And people who go for private health care, they are seen by the same doctors that are treating us in NHS hospitals. The doctors that are treating us, you know, some of them are absolutely brilliant, and they're treating NHS patients, but they largely, the senior doctors also have private practices as well, and they work in private hospitals as well. So when you pay to go private, as they say, when you pay, you're seeing the same doctor you would have seen anyway. But it, to me, it's about the way the hospital is run. And I have been told that hospitals south of the river are not funded as generously as the ones north of the river, and I think that's probably true. That's probably part of the problem. The ones in South London, where I live, they're not as well resourced. You know, they're overworked, they're understaffed, and they're not as well resourced. I think that's part of it.
I agree. I agree with that being a good part of it. But here's the other thing, right? Is that you don't, is that happens, and it's not something that I don't think is necessarily intentional, right? Here's what happens when you are inundated with the same types of issues repeatedly, regularly. Like, for instance, I talk about people at Cook County, and I'm blessed with County because Cook County has produced some of the greatest doctors that we have seen, believe me. But it's like working in Cook County's ER used to be like being a Vietnam veteran, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was triage. And so you're seeing things at a high rate. And so because of that, you become desensitized to something.
Mm.
Remember, to each individual person, it is a unique experience, right?
Yes.
But
yes.
To a certain doctor, this is the fifth gunshot wound I've seen today. And I see 50 a week, right? So his attention to maybe missing something, or his attention to diagnose something based on his experience, happens more likely and readily. And instead of that increasing the quality of care, it increases the speed of care, but not the quality of care. Do you see what I mean? And I think this happens to them. I think this happens to them without them really realizing what is happening until somebody shakes them up.
It's probably a gradual process.
Right. You ever drive to work and then not realize how you got there? Like,
yeah.
Because you go or drive home, and that and somebody goes, well, you know, you turn left. I didn't see that, right? Somebody has to shake you up and be like, you know, you do this every day, so you're not aware of the fact that of the road you travel. You think the car is driving on its own. Well, turn left, turn right, but it's not, right? But you go through this process every day. So this is what happens to them. I think this is overwhelming. Now, some people. There's some people in the healthcare system who just shouldn't have been doctors. That's true. But that's in anything. In my industry, there's some people who should not have been granted a license to practice insurance. And some people
that's true in every industry, right?
In every industry, that's what I'm saying. So in every industry, the restaurants I go into, they should not have been granted a license to serve food here, right? But overall, I think it is the desensitization. To what they're seeing. So when you're in a hospital,
this is terrible. I think it's terrible. I mean, in Britain, we have a serious problem with knife crime more than gun crime. But I've been to accident and emergency at my local hospital a few times in the past few months, and they have security guards walking around, and their uniforms look exactly like police officers. And that freaked me out when I first saw them, because I thought, why are there police hanging around here? The only difference in the uniform is that the police has the word police on the back.
On their back.
But, you know, if someone's coming towards you, they look just like a cop. I'm thinking, what are the cops doing in a hospital? Why are they in a hospital? Then I found out, I read about this, that, because as I said, we have a lot of problems with knife crime. If a gang of young people attacks somebody and knife somebody, and the young person doesn't die and gets taken to the hospital, the others will come into the hospital to try to find that person, usually, you know, a male or guy. They'll come
finish
into the
off?
Hospital to try to find him and finish him off.
Horrible.
Yes.
Horrible.
It's awful, listen, it's awful.
That's terrible.
And this is why the police
but
and the security guards have to be in the hospital.
Right. That's terrible, but that's not new, right? I mean, in real life. Well, maybe to some people that may be shocking, but man, I live in Chicago.
I find it shocking. I find it shocking.
Right.
And
I'm disappointed.
This is what I'm saying.
But
I can see how if you see that kind of thing every day, you start to become desensitized. I find it shocking
exactly.
because I don't have to deal with
exactly.
that every day.
Exactly. And that's what happens. So sometimes you want to be mad at the doctor, and I've had to shake a few doctors up, right? So you want to be mad at the doctor, but sometimes they're just going through, they're just trying to get through the day. You know
yeah,
what I'm saying?
Right.
I mean, at the end of the day, they're tasked with something that is superhuman, right? To save lives, okay? But at the end of the day, they're just trying to get through the day. And that and sometimes they make the mistake of not realizing how vitally important each step of their day is. Like, if you want something that doesn't have a lot of impact, go get a job somewhere. Like, but
yeah,
not in the
that's
hospital.
Right. That's right. Because someone was saying to me recently that mistakes are being made that really should not be made. And in the hospital,
right.
the clinicians are working 12-hour shifts. Right?
Yeah,
you have to keep 12-hour shifts.
Yeah.
I just
well,
think
I
that's outrageous, but that's what's happening.
But guys, look, we can't. So in this conversation, I don't want to get away from some takeaways that people can really have. Women can really have, men can really have, and making drastic changes, okay?
Thank you for reminding us about that. And I also just want to say, two callers on the line. Before we go into what you're going to share with us, I want to say, if you want to speak to me, Jana, or if you would like to speak to my guest or have a question for my guest, please press 1. That will raise your hand, and then I'll let you in on the call. Okay, so you're talking about making drastic changes, Ken. So what kind of drastic changes are you talking about?
So here's the deal. Here's the secret, is that drastic changes don't happen drastically.
Mm-hmm.
And so how we make change incremental. So let's start with the fact that we make a decision to say that to assess our current health situation and to make sure that we are financially prepared. So if we don't have insurance, get it. I mean, that means that we got to miss something. If it means we don't watch cable, we don't watch cable. What's more important?
Right.
Okay? Secondly, if we have a problem that's dealing with obesity, if we have a problem that's dealing with high cholesterol, if we have a problem that's dealing with a high glucose or sugar, as they like to call it, diabetes, let's make a decision to address those things today. Now, you're not going to get out and walk a 20-mile marathon a day. You're not. And so you haven't walked anywhere. You're not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So let's walk around the block. Let's start walking around the block today,
right?
And then after we walk around the block, let's walk 2 blocks in a couple of days. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
it's gradual.
You
input these changes at a small level at first.
Right.
Because if you're trying to walk, you know, 20 miles the first day, you're going to go never again and go back to sitting on your seat watching your TV because it's more comfortable.
You might end up making that 20 miles, but you're going to be so miserable until that'll never happen again. So let's talk about weight because that's a big thing in our community, right?
Hmm.
So we're not going to stop. You say, I'm going to stop eating meat. Right, and you've been eating hamburgers and chicken every day for all your life, so you're not gonna stop eating meat. I mean, not without making yourself miserable. It is a change you'll be able to make temporarily, but it's not a lifestyle change.
Right.
So what do you want to do? Let's start saying, look, I'm gonna cut down this amount of red meat that I eat. I'm gonna get down to white meat. Then I'm gonna cut down this. And I'll cut down this, and I'll bring myself gradually. It may take me a year to get there,
That's
but I gotta
right.
start today.
That's right.
So right now with my money, I don't have enough money to pay all of these. I can't afford insurance. I can't do this. What is on my list? Well, look, I got cable. I got the super. I got the look, people. This kills me. people who don't have income have a $1,200 cell phone. Come on, man. What are you doing with a cell phone that costs over $1,000? Are you telling me you don't have any money? You're not making any sense. So let's start with putting ourselves in perspective with the things that we can. Maybe I can't afford to live like the Rockefellers. Maybe I don't wear a Gucci purse or Gucci shoes or whatever it is. Maybe I actually get a pair of shoes from Payless, and then I'm able to take care of maybe put a little bit in insurance. I can't have a lot, but I can do a little bit. I can put my money over here because my enemy is not the hospital or any other insurance company. My enemy is the banking system. My enemy is the healthcare system. My enemy is the thought processes which fight against my success. Those are my enemies. Not any of the things that you're thinking of. There's no person. There's no political party. There's none of that. I'm not concerned about any of that. I'm concerned about the thought processes that hinder my success. So let's start making changes today. Let's make a decision today and say, you know what? One thing I'm going to do is I'm not going to McDonald's this week. Or one thing I'm going to do is I'm going to take a little bit, I'm going to take my portions that I normally eat, and I'm going to reduce that by not half because you feel like you're starving. I'm going to make them a little less. I'm going to eat on a smaller plate, right? We're going to start doing incremental things today. Like when you get off the phone, when you hang up the phone, when you hang up the call, make a decision of course to do something today and every day. Now, what will happen is if you do a little bit of something every day, then 6 months from now, you look up and your life will be different because you form different habits.
That's right. And then you look back and you think, wow, I've really achieved something. And you have a sense of achievement, which is, you know, very, very positive.
Which propels you to move forward.
Oh, yeah. Well, Donna on Facebook agrees with you. She said, yes, start today cutting back on eating animals. So if you just cut a little bit back. The animals will thank you as well.
That's right. Unless the chickens have not died since I stopped eating meat, which is nearly 30 years now. You know, it's a good feeling, actually. I haven't killed any chickens in nearly 30 years.
Right.
That is a good feeling. My guest today is Ken Atwood, Agency Manager of Diabetic Insurance Solutions and Tribal Wealth United. This is Jana with Success Strategies. We've been talking about health inequalities, racial and gender health inequalities, and Ken has been dropping a lot of wisdom over the last couple hours, and I really appreciate you coming on the show, Ken, because you've talked about changing our mindset and changing our actions, and when we do those two things, then we can start to see real changes happen in our lives.
Absolutely.
And so I appreciate you guys having me on. It's been a pleasure. Like I said, you guys can reach me at 773-703-1215. I'm available.
That will be on the page.
I'm going to
make sure
you're
on the page.
So
people got your details, yeah?
Thank you
so much. I'm putting online. I have your contact information up on the screen. And make sure you go to TribalWealthUnited.com and FinancialPowerMeeting.com.
Yes, ma'am.
www.naimalatif.com. Okay, I wish everybody a happy, healthy, and wealthy month, and I'll see you again the first Saturday in July. This is Jana with Success Strategies.
And
be sure to get
your copy of the book, Fantastic.
On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to thank all of you who participated in today's discussion. And to our global family listening from all around the world, we say thank you. To our family in China, Xiexie. India, Zanyaba. Japan, Arigato. Korea, Kamsahamnida. Russia, Spasiba. Germany, Danke. Poland, Dziękuję. France, Merci. Spain, Gracias. Italy, Grazie. Egypt, Shukran. Ghana, Medasi. Nigeria, Eshe. South Africa, Ngiyabonga. Senegal, Jerez. Kenya, Asante.
Israel, Toda, Pakistan, Shukriya, Afghanistan, Tashakur, Saudi Arabia, Shukran, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you, and may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessings.